Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast. It's for the week of July 22nd already. Wow, I'm John Gibson, and I'm back in civilization. Yeah, and with me on a Sunday night is Jim Allen. How you doing, buddy?
Now, let me get this straight. You go back to your wife's hometown.
Right? No, wrong. Your wife's parents' hometown.
Okay, your wife's father's hometown, her Fudusato, her place of official place of origin, and it's not civilized. Okay, let's see how that flies. Well, she might agree with you. I mean, my spouse is pretty much the same, and her home is actually civilized, and I say that, she shakes her head.
Well, yeah, okay. Well, we had to do everything except go to the well and get buckets of water out and bring them back for a shower. That's about all we didn't have to do. We were out in the country in the sticks. There were no Starbucks, dude. There was nothing. I tried to look up the Starbucks. The map said, you know, there are no Starbucks in this area. And it told me to go away.
Miyagi Prefecture is over the mountains.
Hey, we use Google. Please use Google for things that are in this area, not for things that are not in this area. And it's shut down.
I was laughing at you.
I tell you this, man. Yeah. It was fun. It was nice. I think I posted a few pictures from when I was out on some runs. But I'm a city mouse, man. I'm a city mouse, and I'm proud of it.
Well, having said that, I was also in Tohoku on Wednesday and in Fukushima, which is sort of Tokyo-friendly part of Tokyo, of Tohoku. And I was struck, I'll tell you, I think, although my spouse might not like it, it was gorgeous. I was thinking how green and how it's just full of rivers and big forested hills and beautiful parks. And okay, it's 2 hours from 2.5 hours from Tokyo, tough, but it was lovely. I was just thinking, man, I just want to come back when the peaches are ripe.
It's lovely, but for every river with the rushing water, there are all kinds of insects attacking every hole that is in a house. For every beautiful mountain you see, there are animals, snakes, frogs that are crawling
monkeys,
all over the place at night.
Wild pigs, all those goodies.
All kinds of things. I mean, I was out on a run and I was fearing for my life. So I'm glad to be back in the city. Glad to be back in Tokyo. all the way. I could deal with that jungle.
Well, I'll tell you, on my way to the ballpark, I was using my Google Maps and it said, turn left here. And I'm going.
No way, you turn left.
I'm going like through the mud up that gravel strip between the two rice fields. Are you kidding me?
No.
And no, it wasn't. It was a shortcut. And it actually was a shortcut. So I found a way around the mud. That's where I went to the ballpark on Wednesday. My country adventure.
All right. Let's get to this week's show. On this week's show, we've got a chat with Zach Neale of Cebu. We're going to discuss the Lions, look at the leading MVP candidates, update the leading team and the number of outs made on the bases, and talk about a little bit more. So let's start swinging.
Clearing the bases!
Okay, well, I finally got a chance to talk to Zach Neale. I'd wanted to talk to him ever since I looked at his numbers in the United States in the minors and the majors. Primarily what I saw was, you know, high strikeout to walk ratio.
Okay.
Basically, the guy doesn't walk people. He doesn't strike out a lot, but he doesn't walk anybody. So I thought, this guy, if you can command the strike zone in Japan, that's a huge part of the battle. So I was really eager to get a chance to talk to him, but he was not available a lot at the beginning of the season. Every time I was there, he wasn't there. As you know, I say this every week, so probably I just should shut up about it.
No, you're right, because a couple times that I had been out to the Dome and I had seen Ernesto and I had talked to Deontay Heath, and I saw Kyle Martin, but I never really got to see Zach at all. So yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. So anyway, so I was in Chiba a couple of weeks ago, and I did get a chance to see Kyle and Zach, and I asked them both to do interviews, and we did these interviews at the same time, the one we did a couple of weeks ago. And I didn't expect the chance to talk to Zach because he went into the clubhouse.
Right.
But he said we'd talk, and he did a Dennis Sarfati on me. You know, I'm sitting there talking to Kyle, and here comes Zach again.
Nice.
So I want to thank you, Zach Neal, for being so generous with your time. And I also want to thank you for just the really, positive attitude. It was infectious. So take it away, Zach.
Our guest this week on the Japan Baseball Weekly podcast, we're dipping into the Cebu Lions pool again with starting pitcher Zach Neal. Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, no worries. Glad to be here, glad to do it, and look forward to talking with you.
Yeah, well, it's been fun, watching the Lions. John and I both live out on the west side of Tokyo, so we probably see the Lions more than anybody. It's the easiest, one of the easy trips for us to go out to MetLife Dome, which is unusual because most people don't like going there. It's so far for a lot of people.
Yeah.
But now tell us about, first of all, how it was that you got to Japan. What was the process? At what point did you say to your agent, okay, let's do this?
You know, that's funny because it's always been something that I aspired to do. Me and my wife always said it would be so cool just for the experience, you know, being able to live here and, you know, learn the culture and, you know, get to know these different teammates. And, you know, we always thought that it would be something that would be really fun. And I always, you know, like I said, I always dreamed of doing. And my first big league season in 2016 went really well. And I think as soon as that happened, I started to get a lot of not only Japanese interest, but South Korea, Asian interest.
Okay.
Actually had an offer for South Korea that year.
Right.
And then didn't work out. I was on the Athletics 25-man big league roster. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's a lot of complications with that. And
right.
So I would say 2016 is really when the interest started. Mm-hmm. And then 2017, I had a lot of more interest. And then, again, it didn't work out. Because I started learning how truly hard it is to get over here. You know, your stars really have to align. And I always tell my friends, you know, if you get the chance and your stars do align, I think that you should do it because, you know, I can tell you firsthand that it's not easy to get here.
No.
So last year I was with the Dodgers. I had a wild year. I was up in the big leagues. I got traded to Cincinnati. I was there in AAA, and then I got traded back to the Dodgers with 2 months left in the season. And that's when Cebu saw me, and, lucky for me that they had interest prior to that, you know, from the following years, and I had a couple good games, and they saw me, and they liked me, and then this offseason was the first time, you know, I had a true offer to come to Japan, and, you know, I told my agent, I said, he texted me, he called me, I was like, please, just tell me that you're not, you know, messing with me, you know, because this is something that I wanted to do, and it's been so elusive and so difficult, so, you know, I was excited because, you know,
wow.
Yeah, and then, so this offseason, finally, stars aligned, and I got my chance, so I'm just happy to be here, honestly.
That's really, it's not so unusual now.
Yeah.
That I meet people who said I've been trying to get to Japan for years, but usually it's typically is the guy who plays, you know, a few games in the majors, and then it's like does everything right.
Yeah.
But they're still back in AAA. Mm-hmm. They're still looking at major league, you know, spring training invites, and they're going like, I don't, you know, I'm 28 years old. I'm 29 years old. Is this where I want to be? And as opposed to, this is something I really want to do. Japan being at some point an interest is something that's really kind of a phenomenon the last 5 or 6 years. I think when they expanded the rosters to 4 guys about 15 years ago, that made a difference because now so many more guys can play here.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as you said, it's really hard to get here.
Yes.
And it's also really easy. It's also really easy to fail here. It's easy to fail in baseball. It's part of the game.
I think you can say that about every level at anywhere.
Sure.
You know? You know, I've played at every level there is to play at, including the big leagues, a substantial amount of time. You know, I would say, you know, a lot of quality innings there. And And that's something that I've learned, you know, being here, is that it is easy to fail. Mm-hmm. It's a hard game. It's still baseball,
hard.
And it's, you know, baseball is extremely difficult. And you know, for me, like I said, I was just extremely lucky and extremely blessed to be here. So I take that mindset every day of coming here, like realizing how fortunate I am, mm-hmm. you know, to the team to have me here. And I just try to take it every day as the blessing that it is, you know. Mm.
Well, it looks like the last couple of you've won, I think, the last two starts.
Correct? Yeah, yeah.
And grind. It looked like at first it was more of a grind, like less of things weren't working your way, and a little bit more working your way. It looks like you're having a better. Yeah. So tell us what's going on.
I had a spring training. I had a leg deal. I had a hamstring.
Okay.
You know, I've never had that happen to me. I've never, you know, missed time. I've never experienced something like that. And so that was a shock, you know. So, you know, I felt like, to me personally, in my feelings, I was a little bit limping into the start of the season. Because
okay.
I wanted to be ready. I wanted to start. I wanted to be ready for them. They brought me over here. I felt I was putting pressure on myself to show them and be ready. And, you know, I think maybe I don't want to say I should have waited, because I was able to pitch, but, you know, I didn't feel 100% myself.
Okay.
And, you know, so, and then I got sent down to the minor leagues, and, you know, I had the chance to work with the coaches there. I had a chance to learn the Japanese style of baseball. I probably had 6 or 7 minor league starts.
Right.
And so that gave me a chance to really, you know, take a step back and, you know, catch my breath, get stronger in the weight room. I had lost a lot of strength. So just really kind of like a refresher and get things going again. And, you know, that's been a real blessing, honestly, because, you know, I got to, like I said, work with the coaches down there, learn the game. They, you know, I was inquisitive about everything. You know, I want someone who's been here and throws like me to help me. I've never pitched in Japan. I'm not going to tell you that I know how to pitch in Japan. I know what I can do well. And so I was, you know, just trying to learn the game and trying to, you know, just learn from the coaches that have done it and had success. Mm. So that was, you know, that was nice. You know, that was a really big step for me, and you know, I think it's been helpful.
Well, I spent, ironically, I spent a lot of time last summer talking with Kazuo Matsui, the minor league manager, this year, and he told me, he explained to me in many, many subtle ways how hard it was for him to make a transition to the majors, because he was a huge star here, and he didn't become a huge star in America. It was a big disappointment here. But the point is, the adjustments you have to go through are many and subtle.
Yes, yeah. I mean, you know, just learning the hitters and the way that they go about their business in the box, the way their strategy, their plan. You know, they. For me, I'm a contact guy. I try to throw strikes. I try to force the issue. I try to, you know, pitch my game. And so at first that was, you know, that was good in that place. But I've had to adjust and, you know, throw. I've had to learn some new pitches. I've had to, you know, change the way I go about what has always been successful for me.
Okay.
And I've had to, you know, make some new adjustments. So
a common adjustment I've heard people who did pick up new pitches. I've heard people who maybe didn't pick up new pitches, but changed the way they threw their curveball, changed the way they threw their slider. Another one is change how they use them and the situations in which they use them. Right-handers will sometimes ditch their changeup to most of the left, those contact lefties, ditch the two-seamer.
It's different for everyone, you know. I think everyone's had to, you know, make their certain adjustment, and you know, that's just what I'm trying to do every day is learn as much as I possibly can. And, you know, like I said, I come here knowing that this is such a cool and unique opportunity, so I don't want to foil that in any way. I come here, you know, trying to get better each and every day, because I want to stay here. I want to play here. I've enjoyed my time, and I
How's the obviously, since being somebody who did want to come, from your perspective, how's the dynamic of the clubhouse? Because the foreign players who come pretty much universally say, "Oh, this is the best team I ever played on." But what they mean is it's different and it's good. I mean, in what ways? How does it feel to be in the clubhouse with teammates who don't all speak English?
Right. That's the biggest thing, obviously, is your actual language, being able to... I don't speak Japanese, they don't speak English, so I think it's important to... I think your body language is important, because everyone can read and speak body language. So the way you carry yourself, I try to, be positive to them without even speaking the language. Right. That's just, I want to give off that vibe, that energy of...
Right.
Trying to be a positive person, so... in that way it's similar, but they've all been really nice and really welcoming to me, which is something that I was nervous about, because I can't speak the language, they can't speak my language, but everyone's been super welcoming, and it's been nice.
But I see play, I go to spring training here, and I go to spring training in America, and I see the same thing. I see people from different countries.
Mm-hmm.
You're sharing the same experience, you got the same goal, there's a big bond there that I don't get with my coworkers very often, but I mean it's a different vibe that you all understand. I mean, in that respect, it's kind of... some of the rules are different. They'll say like the way you prepare for the game is a little differently.
Yeah.
The
yeah.
routines are different, but the fact
at the end of the day, we're all trying to do the same thing.
Exactly.
And I think that's the uniting bond is we're all trying to win. So
you and the other pitchers are all trying to get the same hitters out.
Yeah.
You're trying to work with the same catchers.
Yeah.
Make the same plays.
Yeah.
So that part is probably... how big is that, that you're all sharing the same experience to having a good relationship, having a positive atmosphere, good working environment?
Yeah, I mean, that's, like anywhere I've ever played, especially here, though, it's, every day that we're here, everyone has the same goal of trying to win.
Mm-hmm.
So that's nice.
That's not so different.
No, exactly.
You don't see a lot of one of the things that people have told me about is in Japan, you rarely see any division in the clubhouse. I mean, it's famously happened a few times where you've had sort of teams fighting factions within the management. But pretty much it's like we're all here, we're all in it. There's a real kind of a unified thing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
That's the norm here.
Yep.
And when the coaches say, "This is what we're going to do," you don't have anybody saying, "Yeah, why?"
No, exactly, yeah. They're in charge, and, they have the same goal we do, so.
Yeah. Okay, so thanks so much for being on the podcast, look forward to talking to you again in the future.
Sounds great.
Okay, thank you, Zach. Real pleasure, and look forward to talking to you again.
Yeah, thank you very much, Zach. And like I said, I haven't been able to bump into you. In fact, I was out at Cebu Dome today, and I didn't see him. I think I did actually see him, but I was on the other side, so I wasn't able to say hello. But I did see him.
Well, he pitched today. So.
Yeah. I wasn't going to try to talk to him anyway. So.
So anyway, John, what would you like to comment? Here's a former Dodger, man.
Yeah,
this
I know.
Place is full of Dodgers.
I always like this place is crawling with Dodgers. It's awesome. This was really, really...
That's not the word I was going to use, but that's okay. You go with it.
I'm going. But yeah, maybe only to as far as the World Series, and then maybe another loss. But who knows? It was really, really informative. I thought you did a great job with the interview. Although I think at the end it seemed like you were interviewing yourself. But
I was having this... Well, I...
You were having a conversation.
It was a conversation. And what happened was he said a couple of things that I hadn't expected. And I was trying to get to a point about what he was saying. And I was just fishing.
It's all good. So
yeah.
So I listened to it on the way home from Akita. So that was one of the things I listened to on the train. And then I listened to it again this morning. To take some notes, and that was while I was running. And I really encourage listeners to actually listen to this interview twice. I think this is a double take again. Sometimes I tell you guys that this interview is so good that I think you just need two times to listen to it to absorb all the things that are going on in there. There's a lot of information in there. So I do recommend that you back it up and listen again. But I'm going to try to be brief in my comments. I always say that, and then we end up talking about the interview for a long time. But I really like what Zach said early on in the interview, that he had aspired to be in MPB and that it's very difficult to get here. And I thought that was a really big point, because we've seen a lot, you and I personally have met and seen a lot of players who have come here. And that's one of the things I always ask the players, you know, what brought you to NPB? How did you end up here? And some of them say, well, you know, I was playing in the majors, but I was a fringe player and I wanted to do this. You know, you have that player, and then you have B, I was in the minors and never got an opportunity, so I came to Japan. You have that player, and then you have some guys who say, well, you know, my agent said, what about Japan? And some teams were interested, and then they decided to give me a bunch of money, and here I am. I mean, you know, there's a gamut of players, but we hear a lot of stories. So I always like to hear about how these guys end up here. But when you hear a guy say, you know, I've really been looking to come here for a while, and it's very difficult to get here, that really tells you how these players who end up putting the uniforms on for these teams, you know, it's not, they don't pick them on a whim. And that there's so many players who actually want to come to Japan and see what the level of competition is, and see if they can, as you pointed out, it's easy to fail. So see if they can have some success here, and whether they're like a Miles Michaelis and a guy who wants to come over, establish a name, and then go back to the States and take what he's learned and apply that over there. And there have been a lot of pitchers who have done that. So I'm just pointing out Miles Michaelis because he's one of the latest guys, one of the most recent guys. But whatever the mission is that they have, for them to get here, it's not easy. And I just want, I mean, you know, people meaning people who watch, whether they're fans or observers or professional scouts or whatever they are, people who watch, these guys don't come here easily. It really is a difficult task to even be able to put the uniform on and go out there and play for these foreign guys, these import players. And when you hear Zach say, you know, I aspired for years, and then his agent texted him and he said, man, don't mess with me, you know, that was his reply.
Yeah, exactly.
To him. I'm like, come on, man, are you serious? This is how badly you wanted to come to Japan? And it doesn't, you know, we all think of the major leagues as the highest, I mean, I'm not sure that we all do, but a lot of people think it, and it is. I mean, there are no, that's why I never have a problem with the World Series champion calling themselves the world champion, because there are no limits on foreign players. You could have a team of all Japanese players if you wanted to in Major League Baseball. There's no limits, no quotas, no restrictions. And so when you do win a championship, you literally have the right to say you're the best team in the world, because you could have a team made up completely of import players. But you hear these guys wanting to come over into Japan and not being able to get there. I remember a long time ago, we had an MP3 question from a guy who was in New York who said, you know, how do I get to Japan? I want to come over and play there. And my advice to him was, call your agent. But you hear that kind of thing, and that's the number one thing that stuck with me after hearing Zach. And, you know, that's whenever I see a guy now, I think I'm going to think of Zach and his comment about, you know, don't mess with me, to his agent, you know, because they're so happy.
I know. Well, yeah, it was, I have to honestly, I mean, I've heard people say I've tried to get to Japan, but when they say it, they say, oh yeah, I've been trying to get to Japan. Like in the sense, like they were saying, yeah, I've always wanted to go to Chicago and I've been trying to go, you know, that kind of thing. It's one of the things. It's not quite on the bucket list. It's more like on the, you know, on the plate list. You know, it's there. It's over there. You know, it's not like it's gonna make or break you. But with the emotion that he had about this story,
right,
it caught me off guard.
Right.
For everybody else, it's a career option. For him, it was like it was part of his bucket list. I want to play baseball in Japan. And that struck me. And now, a couple of other things I thought that was really interesting, and I'll tick them off really fast, or just one thing, I suppose, was talking about making the adjustments to Japan and his adjustment with spring training. It's such an old story. But, you know, the guy comes and, you know, and he's trying to fit in, and it's such a hard thing to do because everything's different.
It's all new, baby.
I swear that, you know, when Masahiro Tanaka told me, oh, yeah, look, I knew everything I was supposed to do because Ichiro and Kuroda were my teammates when I was a first-year major leaguer. Oh, so it was easy? Oh, no, it was really, really hard.
Right.
You know, he was going, it was really hard because the way the rest is worked and your workouts, everything's different, you know. So he knew, he had people counseling him, so he wasn't like losing sleep over it, but he was kind of losing sleep over it. Until you've done it yourself and veteran players when they get to be about 30 and they've played pro ball for 6, 7, 12 years, they'll so often will tell you, you know what your body needs. I know what my body needs. And they're generally right. They know how their body reacts to cold and to heat and to pain and to fatigue.
Right.
But you don't know, and this is a thing, you don't know how your body reacts to different patterns of stress in different, in different countries, in different, you know, they put the Japanese baseball will put demands on your body that you won't get in the majors.
We've
because
heard
of the way they train, and you don't know how to, you don't know what the optimal way to deal with it is until your body starts telling you what it needs. And these guys don't come equipped with that muscle memory. So that was kind of interesting. So he kind of overdid it a little bit in training. And it kind of came back and got him. But then the other side, we saw the flip side of that, which I've heard a half a dozen times. Oh, I did too much in training. I wasn't ready for the opening day. But I got to spend extra time on the minors, where I really learned how Japanese baseball works.
Exactly.
I've heard that a half a dozen times.
Yeah. We've heard it, and we've heard just getting guys going down to the farm and getting a lot of swings and being able to, get one-on-one time with the coaches and learn about
the best one,
playing in Japan.
The best one for that, and I'll make a divergence here, was Coco Ballantyne, and that was 2013. He had a little hamstring issue, I believe it was, a leg issue in the end of spring training, and he missed the first 9 or 10 games of the season. But what he was doing was up there swinging every day in the minor leagues. Then he come back, and after having missed the first 9 or 10 games of the season, comes back and hits 60 home runs.
Right. Yeah, okay. I do remember that about Coco. But, the other thing that when you talked to Zach and you interjected about how it's easy to fail, and he said, yeah, it is. And then you asked him about making adjustments and adding pitches, and my spidey sense, and speaking of spiders, I saw my year's worth of spiders up in Akita, so I don't need to see any more. But anyway,
okay.
I was traumatized. There were so many, and there was a huge
I want to make sure that so John's just making sure that I don't have the big, you know, I'm not the most I'm not making the most oblique statements in the podcast this week for a change.
Okay, oblique. Okay, but yeah, my spidey sense was tingling because I'm like, oh, what pitches has he added? What has he taken away? And I wished we could have gotten that part on the interview. I know you ended up asking him later for either for a blog or for Kyoto, but
my website, yeah.
Yeah, but you know, when I hear about that, especially first-time pitchers in NPV, I love hearing about how long it takes them to get a pitch ready for games, and how they made those adjustments, because that's so important. And that's what he said when he spent that time in the minor leagues on the farm team. He learned how to pitch in Japan. What he said, you know, how to pitch in Japan. And I thought that was a really, really big statement. And, you know, he pitched today, and I know he
He did a quality start. He had six. He gave up two-run homer to Steven
Moya,
in the first. Moya, and then a solo shot. What is it about Masataka Yoshida? He's got this sort of tie-breaking home run thing going on this weekend. But tie-breaking home run in 2 days, and and he hit one, and that was the high point for the Buffalo. So he gave up three runs on a pair of homers in six innings. But again, it was kind of typical Zach Neale start. I don't mean with the home runs, but I mean with not walking guys.
Well, yeah. And he's 5-1 now, and all his wins, I noticed, have come in domes. Now, that's not too surprising when you know.
It's not bad in the Pacific League when five of the teams play in domes.
Right. That makes sense. So he looks like these domes really suit him well. But, 5-1, he's really looking good in that respect. So I think, regardless, I mean, you know, we have seen this Lions struggle with the starting pitching, so I think they're glad to have the five or six innings that he's putting in every week.
Now, one of the things I was thinking about, you know, I mentioned this 2 weeks ago and brought it up again last week, was the fact that the Lions are not doing well with balls, not doing as well as other teams, turning the balls in play numbers into the out numbers.
Mm.
Right, so their defensive efficiency is poor, and so my thinking about that is, well, gee, that's what a guy needs. A guy doesn't strike out. When I was talking to him, I'm thinking, oh, geez, we had just gotten on that subject a couple of 5 days before, and here he is telling me about how he doesn't strike people out. I'm thinking, oh my gosh, but when I think about the Lions. We are talking about the Lions now, are we not?
We are.
Okay.
Without even
I'm just checking because I didn't hear it.
That was a seamless transition.
Okay. So anyway, so I was thinking about that, and I was thinking, okay, I had to ask myself a question, which is, are the Lions? There's two things that stood out for me. One, generally, if the guys aren't turning out balls and play into outs, you kind of just say, well, they can't play defense. But you said something the other day, and I think it's always a possibility that the pitching is just bad. Normally, I mean, there's a rule basically that what often looks like bad pitching is actually bad defense.
Mm-hmm.
But I think with the Lions case, I'm concluding that a little bit of what looks like bad defense is actually bad pitching.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason I say this is that, okay, one, I'm going to reference Delta Graphs, the subscription data site, which if you are interested in Japanese baseball, it's 1,000 yen a month, but I strongly recommend it if you're really nuts about analyzing players and such. Now, one of the things they have is they have different defensive measures, and they have a lot of subjective measures. It's essentially like fan graphs.
Right.
Okay, so I wasn't a fan graphs person until somebody required me to look at it the other day. Anyway, so what I want to say is that one of the categories they have, they'll have somebody at every game and saying, oh, this is hard contact, soft contact, and medium contact. I mean, it's just some guy or some woman basically ticking off hard contact to this location, medium contact. You know, it's not very scientific. It's sort of like, well, if we get enough of them,
mm-hmm.
it'll be okay.
It'll be all right.
It's better than nothing. It's gotcha. Good enough for government work. But having said that, the Lions, according to Delta Graph's surveyors, give up more hard contact than any other NPB team.
Wow. Not surprising.
Well, you know, we're not talking huge numbers. Like 33.8% of the balls in play are hard contact. And I think the most hard contact in NPB belongs to the Lions, 33.8%. The softest contact, the lowest percent of hard contact belongs to the Hanshin Tigers, 29.3%.
Okay. So it's pretty close.
That's about a sixth more. You know, they got about 18% more hard contact than the Tigers do over at the other end of the spectrum. But anyway, this does jibe with something I've noticed, is that the Lions give up an ungodly. I want to keep this secular. They give up an awful lot of doubles.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Okay. So in terms of how many doubles, of course, the Lions give up a lot of hits, so they're going to give up more doubles, but I'll just stick with the raw numbers because it's easier to explain.
Okay.
So anyway, the Lions have allowed 157 doubles, which is the most in NPB, which is almost actually double what the Hawks have allowed.
Wow.
I mean, it's bizarre. The Hawks have allowed 87 doubles.
Wow.
No other team, the closest team to them is 107, and that's the Tigers. I find the Tigers actually, that's a very impressive number. Although, partly what it is the Tigers are basically the ultra ground ball pitching staff in Japan.
Oh, okay.
But you know, Koshien is a good park for doubles. It's so gosh darn big.
Yeah, I was going to say that. I was thinking that I could see a lot of balls getting to the gap, or those balls that are tweeners, where if you're playing a team like Hiroshima that will challenge you to make that play and make that play at second base and make the throw, then yeah, I could see a couple of doubles.
But the Lions are funny. The Lions, of course, though, the flip side of that is nobody has, the Lions have allowed 7 triples, which is very few for a Pacific League team. So it's kind of weird. They're cutting off the balls in the gaps, but they're not keeping them from being, they're keeping them from being triples, but they're not catching them.
Right. They're not catching them.
Or something. I noticed something like this weird a couple of years ago, but they certainly do have team speed. There's no doubt. I think that the Lions are easily the fastest team in NPB. But for some reason, they're not catching the balls. So I have to think that some degree that is up to the pitchers. Throwing too many fat pitches.
Yeah, I see. I would come to the same conclusion. And yeah, I think the fastest team in NPB, yeah, when you look at the base stealing, you have to say that. But I'm not sure that that's the case with the entire outfield every night. Because they do shift, they do change the lineup sometimes in right field. I don't think Akiyama in center is the fastest.
Yeah, Kuriyama plays. Well, no, he isn't the fastest, but
no, I'm just saying there's maybe not the fastest outfield, and that can lead to some doubles. But that wouldn't be everything, because you can hit balls down the line, and nobody's going to cut it off and make it a single. So you got no chance, and that has nothing to do with speed. So that's just your pitcher. The batter beating the pitcher on that particular pitch and getting a double.
But having said that, I mean, somebody was, and as I said, I'm not a fan of UZR because it's so volatile. You know, I've seen things in the United States in the Fangraphs where 1 year a player, or in the Fielding Bible, somebody will get these huge numbers of fielding runs saved, more than average. And then the next year he looks like the worst fielder in creation. And I think these are just really small sample sizes. But I was saying something about Sosuke Genda, and this applies to people who are just have bizarre numbers. Sosuke Genda, in the past, Josuke Kikuchi. There's something going on there that allows them to get these bizarre numbers. It's often, part of it will be context, and part of it will be just skill. We don't know which is which, but I'm just throwing this out there because I'm not a big fan of UZR, but Genda, when you look at the shortstops in NPB and UZR, it's like 11 of them are human beings and one of them works for the Avengers.
Yeah, I agree. I agree.
So if you see Genda without his mask on, say, I know you.
Yeah. Actually, I was talking to a Lions reporter, a friend of mine. He does some TV stuff, and we were talking about that today. And when I went out to the park, and I said, yeah, you look at Genda, and he gets to so many balls, and I've heard people complain about his arm or this and that and the other. And I'm like, he's the best shortstop in the Pacific League. What are people? I mean, second to, but I can't say that one's better than the other, I should say, but they're comparable, and that's Kenta Imamiya of SoftBank, but they're really close.
I think Genda's better, and I think Genda's better because right now he's younger and faster.
Yeah, I see you can make the argument. I wasn't a believer in Imamiya, but he makes the plays, so I'm not gonna.
Oh yeah,
I'm not gonna count him short. Yeah. He's gonna make as many plays.
And his problem is that for the last year he's had hamstring issues, so
yeah.
It's kind of a tough comparison.
Yeah, but.
Speaking of which, he's coming back.
He's coming back. Yeah, they're starting to get healthy, but let's stay on the Lions here. I think the Lions proved on Friday night in their game against the Oryx Buffaloes that you can – they to me, this is the equivalent – or the NBA comp would be the Golden State Warriors. Because with the Warriors, you know, if they're up by 10 points or down by 10 points, it feels like the game is still even. It's still fairly even because they can shoot themselves into a lead and they can shoot themselves out of a lead with all the three-point shots that they take. And I think the Lions are the same way. They're like, I said earlier in the year, but if they're up by 3 or 4 runs or down by 3 or 4 runs, most of the time when they're down by 3 or 4 runs, you just don't feel like they're out of the game at all, no matter how late it gets. And if they're up by 3 runs, you don't feel like you're out of the game because of that bullpen. But they turned around a game in which Yoshinobu Yamamoto of Oryx had dominated them for 7 innings, and then he leaves, and the bullpen can't get 6 outs, and the Lions turn it around and win the game. Yuji Kaneko hits a 3-run home run in the 9th inning, and I do want to talk about Takuya Nakamura later because we're going to talk about MVP candidates, so he's in there among mine. But he hits a walk-off for his 400th home run, and you know, it's a real emotional stuff, real emotional game, real, you know, kind of a fight-back game, a moment. They had a moment. The Lions had that, you know, we really can make the playoff kind of a game moment. And, of course, as it comes against the last-place team, I'm not all that impressed. But it's still impressive because they do find a way to get these games and score runs and, hit the key home run, take the key pitch, and do something with it. And, you know, they're just... I did predict them for a 4th-place finish, but you look when they do stuff like that, you think not only is this team really dangerous in the regular season, if it gets into the playoffs, there aren't many teams out there that say, oh, well, you know, we can take care of the Lions, no problem. I don't think that's the attitude. I don't ever think that's the attitude, really, but I think a lot of teams will come in with it. Especially if you're the second place team and you're playing against the Lions in the climax series, I think you're thinking, this is really going to be tough, and particularly this season where they have so much power. Anybody in the lineup, it seems, 1 through 9, and even the pinch hitters who come off. And remember, they still have Ernesto Mejia to come off the bench, and they've got Takumi Kuriyama who can come off the bench, and those guys can get a pitch and really do some damage with it. So. Those kinds of things are going to keep this team in the running. But the thing that I'm really worried about is the physical well-being of reliever Katsunori Hirai. That guy has pitched so many games. I think he pitched again tonight, so that's like 48 games for him and more than 50 innings. I'm really worried for his physical safety. That is not good.
You gonna call like child services or something?
I think we should call baseball services. Baseball player services.
Social services.
See if we can get him into protective custody. I mean, the poor guy. And I mean, he doesn't. He has a pretty good ERA, all things considered. But I just don't see how that could hold up in starting next month. At the end of the month when he gets into that. Well, he's at 48 games, so he could pitch every day the rest of this month. So almost. So let's say he's very close to 60 appearances for the last, for August and September. He's going to go into the 80s in terms of appearances. I don't see that happening, but that's not good if that does happen.
No, that might be trouble. I remember, when people get up in that area a lot.
Mm-hmm.
It's like as soon as they start talking about how durable these guys are, And I'm thinking of, and I'll just pick two names out of my hat here. Hold on, let me get the hat. Tomoyuki Kubota. Oh, record, tiled the record for most games in NPB. Well, what happened? What happened to
the Hanshin reliever?
Tigers.
Yeah,
he was their ace setup guy.
Right.
For years and years, he was part of the JFK
trio.
And he kind of, and then Tetsu Yamaguchi, boy, how durable is he? How good is he? And then suddenly his stuff just disappeared.
Right, and Takuya Asao.
After like 3 years of those. So
Takuya Asao of the Dragons.
A lot of them.
Yeah.
So you can't take these guys for granted.
And you know their bullpen. Again, they're starting ERA, and I think this is through Saturday, so excluding Sunday's games. But the starters have an ERA of 4.61, or took it into Saturday's game, and the bullpen 3.65. So the bullpen is actually, you know, doing decent work. I when you compare the other ERAs or the bullpen ERAs in the Pacific League, I think the Salt Bank Hawks are leading the way. Theirs is under 3. The Lotte Marines is under 3. But then after that, everybody's right around 3.5. So, I mean, it's not too bad. It's comparable to the other teams. But that ERA of 4.61 for the starters, only Lotte was higher going into Saturday's games at 4.62. So, and that's barely higher. So they're struggling in that area. But, you know, obviously Zach Neale is helping them. He's getting close to quality starts, and that's I think that's all you can ask for. And my man, Shinsaburo Tawata, threw on Saturday, and he looked good. Hopefully he has gotten something from that farm stint that he experienced. And also, Kona Takahashi, he looked like I think he started the game on Friday, and it looked like he was having all-star flashbacks. I remember your quote that you mentioned for him. But he turned things around in the middle of that game and pitched well for them. So if they can turn around their starting pitching, I think, yeah, they can be a playoff team. If not, it's going to be close no matter what Hotaka Yamakawa or Nakamura do, or the other guys in terms of the offense. And this offense is incredible. I think we've been saying it all season. And my friend I was talking to today, I'm like, yeah, these guys from 1 through 9 really torment pitchers and just make them stress out before they throw, you know, one or two pitches in a sequence. And just trying to get it through an inning for a reliever it's got to keep them up at night.
It's a lot like pitching in a close game, because you just can't afford to make mistakes. There's that little extra stress. I did a study once that found if, you know, the starting pitchers with three runs or more run support had, you know, you took the same starting pitcher and you put him in the same park and give him one run of run support or 3 runs of run support. Usually the guys with 3 runs of run support had an ERA, it was like a half run lower. It's just
That's
easier. You have room to make mistakes. You don't have to be perfect. But when things are, you know, when you're being told you have to be perfect, well, that's when you're either going to be really, really good or more likely really, really bad.
Yeah. Or just, really, really stressed. So, yeah.
Exactly.
All right. Well, again, the Lions in third place as we speak today, and we'll watch this whole Pacific League, as I predicted in the prediction show. I like to pat myself on the back once in a while because I don't get that much right. But I did predict that this was really going to be close. And so as we watch it going down in the second half, it's going to be really fun. Let's make a four-seam transition. And this is a very difficult, assignment in the Pacific League, but it was fairly easy in the Central League. And that's who are your MVP candidates, your leading MVP candidates as we speak today. So firstly, for the new listeners, Jim and I have vastly different takes on what the MVP is.
Oh, just let's not go into it.
We will never speak of the great debate of 2011 or 12 or whenever that was. I don't even remember.
Yeah.
We'll never speak of it again. And that show has been you know, we had a cease and desist order that came out, and we buried that show.
Yeah, actually, you can't. Yeah, actually, you can't listen to it because John had a court order.
Right. So, and you know, I also think that we just differ in how we arrive. If the teacher
and
was,
and frankly, I don't understand John's thinking about this.
And
so
frankly, yeah, what did I gave you a 1 minute. I said in less than 1 minute or less than 2 minutes, please explain what the MVP meant to you. And after 5 minutes, I still didn't know what you were talking about. But anyway.
Yeah, don't try the abstract stuff on Mr. Gibson.
Abstract is what we're going to call it. All right. So we don't really even talk about, we don't show our math, but we just show our answers. But if we were at a university and the instructor was asking us to show our math, it would be completely different. But it doesn't matter how you get there. It's just, you know, this is the destination.
Well, you have to have math to show it, first of all.
Whoa. Yeah. Okay, we won't get into it. See, you're trying to bait me. I'm not going to take the bait. In the Pacific League, who are your leading candidates for MVP?
And I'm going to pry my jaws open. I was biting my tongue there. Okay, in the Pacific League. Okay, my prime can't partly. I think. Okay, I'm going to give you actually five names.
How did I know that was coming?
No idea. No idea.
Nothing's ever simple.
I'll put them in order, and I'm just gonna throw them out there. Number one, Yurisbel Gracial.
Yeah, I understand that.
Number two, Kodai Senga.
Okay.
Number one, of course, because Gracial's missed part of the season. Then, oh, no way are we going to put him ahead of a starting pitcher who didn't miss part of the season. So Senga will be in the voters' higher rank.
Oh, no, these are ours, and then we're going to talk about the Japanese media.
Okay, actually, because, yeah. Then I wouldn't even have Senga in the list.
If they're
just mine, I would have Yurisbel Gracial, Jabari Blash, and Kensuke Kondo. Those three are, I think, the most valuable players in the Pacific League this year.
Okay, and...
And I had the other guy I was thinking about, well, I think he'll get votes is if the Fighters win, is, of course. The guy who will be the MVP if the Fighters win is Kohei Arihara.
Yeah.
And Kodai Senga if the Hawks win. But those two are the guys who are going to be the MVPs who won't deserve it.
Right. Here's how it goes in Japan for the new listeners again. The voters in Japan usually take the top team and they pinhole a guy who probably doesn't deserve to be MVP, and they give him the award because they don't look at the second place.
If a pitcher has a lot of wins,
mm-hmm.
or the guy has a high batting average.
Sexy numbers.
Exactly. They just sort of sift through which one stands out the most without really thinking about whether it's particularly, you know, oh, a lot of saves. Okay, good. Let's, you know, the starting pitchers, no. Hitters know, hey, but the closer's got 33 saves. Let's make him the MVP.
Right. So
that's how it works.
Right. That's how it works. But we try to give the, you know, the people's choice, and I can't speak for Jim, but actually I did have Gracial as third on my list, and but the guys I had ahead of him were on the same team, and that's Hotaka Yamakawa, and not just because of the home runs, but. Because he's...
They're on... The two guys ahead of the Hawks guy are on the Lions.
Correct. Right? Correct.
Okay.
And that's Hotaka Yamakawa of the Lions. And I've got Takeya Nakamura of the Lions up there just because of his... and this is, again, where Jim and I differ in our how we arrive at the MVP. But I think a lot of pitchers are trying to avoid even throwing... pitches to hit to Yamakawa, and they only face him when they really, really have to, and that they would rather go after Okawari-kun, or that's his nickname, Nakamura. And so I like what he's doing. I know he doesn't have the other numbers to go with it, but I really like the production for the at-bats that he's getting, so I'd like to put him on the list. But we all know that if the Hawks end up winning this thing, they lost six in a row. We were talking last week about how maybe the Giants and the Hawks are on a collision course to meet in the Japan series, and then boom.
Ooh-wee.
I brought it up.
Okay, let's. That's the best. We talked about it.
Hey, we did talk about it. I didn't say it was our idea.
We did talk about it.
I did not misrepresent it. It was not your idea. It was my idea. But we did discuss it. And right after that, they lose six in a row. And now it's close. You know, it was two games. They went into
The two teams between them lost nine games since we had that show.
So, it's a lot closer than it was. But, the Hawks, if they do end up winning, I think Graciel, there's no way the Japanese media is going to vote for him. I think it's going to be Kodai Senga who gets the votes. And I think that's just the way the Japanese media works. But I don't think he deserves it. And I would actually vote for a guy like Taishi Ota of the Fighters before I voted for Kodai Senga. And I know that, even Sho Nakata is having a decent season in terms of, you know, production, the home runs and the RBIs. And I think the RBIs are the real important thing. And I heard an interview on Baseball Tonight, so shout out to Buster Olney and those guys. But they brought on Kenny Lofton, a former Cleveland Indians standout, and he stressed how important it is to do something that you talked about in the past on JBW, and I've always said, which is be an RBI. Because, and that meaning, you know, score runs. Scoring runs is how you win games, and be that RBI. And I really think that's important as well.
Yep.
And, all those things.
Unfortunately, a lot of the people who vote for these awards are not quite certain how the concept of runs scored works, because they think it's the guy at the plate who puts them on base.
Hashtag high heat.
Or at least that's how they work the hero interviews. You know, like, and they always say, no, I have to thank my, the guy the other day said, Joe Watanabe of the Fighters said, well, you know, just like yesterday, the veterans got on base for me. And I could hear the announcer saying, shut up about that stuff. Nobody wants to hear about the guys on base. We want to hear about the guy who drove them in.
Right.
You're the hero.
Yeah.
Those guys were just there by accident.
Yeah, they just happened. They were just standing there. They woke up. They were born on second base. But yeah, I think that's really important. So I'm interested why you have Graciel first. I mean, he's got really good numbers and the RBIs. He's driving in runs, and he's been really steady when he has been out there. He missed some games because of injury, but why did you have him on top?
Oh, just the overall package, you know, getting on base and driving in runs. And, I mean, he's basically done it all. He does everything well if you don't pay too much attention to his defense.
Just look away. Don't mind that man behind the curtain.
Exactly, kind of thing. But, you know, this is a team that really that's really struggled. And this is the guy who's been – he's really been the heart of their offense every game he's played. So, basically, their season took off. And I'm not going to make the argument that they got better when he came back. I think they were a better team. I don't think they were better – you know, they were bad when he wasn't there, and they were bad, and they've been bad since he left.
Correct, yeah. I'm with you. I mean,
I don't want to make that argument. I don't believe it. But some people will. I won't. But I just think he's their best player this year.
I agree. I when you look around and try to see, I mean, they've just been decimated by injuries in terms of having guys play every day. Okay, the record has not been decimated, but
I'm not kidding. I mean, look how many Carp have 249 plate appearances this year.
Right.
How many Hawks have 249 plate appearances? I think it's Takuya Kai and Graciel are the only two.
Right, right. So, not to underscore that stuff, but he when you look at his numbers and his production on that team, he's definitely at the top. He has definitely carried them, and that little boxing home run celebration that he does is so awesome. I love it.
Well, with
Kai.
Takaya, Takaya.
And Takaya, yeah. And it's really nice. I like seeing him. I like what he has done. And you and I know there's no way on God's green earth he's going to win the award unless he hits, you know, the 40 home run mark and blows up when he gets back
I think 30 leading the team in home runs, which is very likely. 30 home runs, if he can get close to 100 RBIs, that's basically it.
No, yeah. Senga. They're going to vote for Senga. I mean.
Yeah, I think so.
It's almost written in stone.
Oh, 12 wins. Oh, he must be the best player on the team. Wait.
He must be. Yeah.
Okay, yep.
All right, Central League. Central League, fairly easy. I've got Hayato Sakamoto at the top, and I don't really see any other guys out there who are going to be candidates in the eyes of the Japanese media. But I would put Neftali Soto up there for the Bay Stars. I really like what he's doing, although his average is not sexy enough, so that's going to help keep him down in that respect. But I think it's Sakamoto all day and every day. Who do you have?
Well, yeah, and I think I like him. I would pick him first, I think, even regardless of where the Giants are. And that's not necessarily because of his offense, but people don't think about Tokyo Dome a lot now. I haven't actually looked at what it's doing to stuff this year, how it's reacting in the Central League, because I mentioned last week Yokohama's is being less of a pitcher's park than it has been in the past, less of a hitter's park than it has been in the past this year.
Right.
But anyway, the number one best, flat out, no park adjusted offensive player in the Central League this year is Tetsuto Yamada. But here's a guy who plays in Jingu and he hits, he's like a superhero at Jingu, and he's just like a really good, he's an all-star everywhere else, and he's a Hall of Famer at Jingu.
Yeah.
So Sakamoto's the guy, and he still plays good shortstop. My three guys at the top are Sakamoto, Seiya Suzuki, and Tetsuto Yamada.
Yeah, I looked at Suzuki and I thought about it for a little while, but he really has not been steady, and that's the one thing that bothers me the most about his production. And again, he's been steady with the batting average, but he really hasn't been steady with the production. So it seems like he gets hits, but they're not helping the team in terms of run scoring. He's not, although he's scored 67 runs. I mean, that's a lot. So yeah, he's up there for me. But I just can't see if Sakamoto, who I talked about maybe winning the home run title this season from the shortstop position, and he's doing a good job of that. He's driving in a lot of runs. He's scoring a lot of runs. And if the Giants win, and they're still, even though they got swept in Hiroshima, they're still head and shoulders, I think, above the rest of the Central League. So I think he's just headed right toward the honor. And that would be his first, right? I don't think he has.
Oh,
one.
Sure.
Yeah, so
sure.
So at the age of 30, getting that honor, I think it's just waiting. It's his for the taking.
Almost.
So.
And I almost guarantee you, if the Giants win and enough people think he's the MVP, he's going to win a Golden Glove too. Not because he's deserving of a Golden Glove, but everybody will be thinking about Sakamoto and what a great season he had. So,
yeah,
it happens.
Okay. All right, making a two-seam transition. We've talked earlier this season on the show about outs on the bases, and I think Jim brought that up, and so I wanted to make sure we kept you updated on that number. And and I love watching the Eagles, and I think they actually have a team philosophy of let's run and make the defense make plays, because they seem to challenge everybody on the field to do so. And they keep, you said they had started out the season, they were running into more outs than any other team, and then they lost their lead.
Yep.
But I think they might have gotten it back, and I had the feeling, because I saw a few, I didn't see much baseball this past week, but I saw a couple outs on the bases by the Eagles. So how are they doing?
Actually, the Eagles have moved into the they were going to take on all comers. We don't care. We're going to have more guys thrown out on the bases than anybody. But what happened was they stopped being negative base stealers. Uh-huh. They're still bad base stealers. But there was a point early in the season where they were getting thrown out more than they were stealing.
That's hard to do.
It is hard to do, but they were managing it, and they were getting a lot of guys thrown out on the bases, and they were losing about 13% of their base runners on the bases,
that's amazing.
And that's not even counting double play. I mean, that's not counting grounded into double plays. Right now, the Eagles are with the Hawks and Marines right around 5% of their runners on estimated runners on base.
Okay.
But the team that's really taken over the mantle, and this is the thing, the team that has really adopted the mantle of you know, the Tout Blanc, they're going to wear the Tout Blanc crown, I think.
How about the run and gun offense?
Yeah, run and gun, indeed. Run and gun down offense.
Right, we'll run until you gun us down.
They're losing 6.5% of the base runners, and not only are they doing that, but they have the fewest base runners on base to begin with.
Oryx.
I mean, okay, so the Oryx Buffaloes, they've had 965 runners on base, which is the third lowest in NPB. And and the conundrum here is the Hawks, who have the lowest. They have the fewest runners on base this year.
The Hawks have the fewest runners on base.
Well, I'm talking about runners standing on base.
Right.
And the distinction is that you get credit for being on base if you hit a home run.
Okay.
But they're not. I'm not counting them as guys who could be potentially thrown out.
No, so, I don't think you can.
Right. So they've got 50 more home runs than the Oryx Buffaloes do. So I think, you know, that's sort of the thing for them. I mean, they're scoring runs because they got a lot of guys on base because of the home runs. But anyway, the Oryx Buffaloes, yeah, they're painfully bad. They're one of these teams that's sort of like you wonder how they manage to kill themselves off so efficiently.
Hashtag high heat.
It's like an evil plot. It's just this is dastardly, as my former coworker you was fond of saying.
Oh my goodness! All right, so efficient at killing themselves off. I love it. Well, okay, so the Eagles are in what place now then?
Yeah. The Eagles are in a group with the Marines and the Hawks, they're about 5%.
Okay.
And then I don't want to take anything into the teams that aren't losing guys on bases cuz I don't really know what it means.
Right.
I mean the Fighters are a fairly aggressive base running team, and they're in the Fighters and Lions and Carp and Dragons are all about 4%.
Okay.
The Tigers a little less. The Giants a little less. The Swallows are like 2.8. They're the low in NPB, but I don't really know.
Yeah, the Swallows are the base huggers.
Yeah, pretty much. I suspect that's the case.
Yeah. I don't see much going on over there. All right. Yeah, well, thank you for that. Thank you for the update, and let's look forward to maybe another September update and see what the number.
Of course, the other thing with the Swallows is that Tetsuto Yamada's hasn't been thrown out stealing this year.
Yeah, he's perfect in base stealing. What is his number? He's up to
21-0.
Yeah, 21. Yeah.
So he's hold on a second. So he's what about third in stolen bases altogether? Yeah, he's third in stolen bases, and he hasn't been caught. He's got his little Takashi Ogino season going on.
Well, good for
except
him.
Ogino had 21 stolen bases by the end of May.
Wow.
Then he got hurt.
Okay. All right. All right. And probably this will be our last segment of the day. So the Dragons had a nice 8-game winning streak. Nice for them, I think. Not so nice for the teams they beat. But they started the month by being swept by the Giants. And this was after, the Dragons went into that series against the Giants having won 5 straight. And then they got swept by the Giants. And then Chinichi lost the opening game of a series against the Swallows. And then, now keep in mind these teams that I'll be mentioning that they beat in this 8-game winning streak. So
you're trying to put an asterisk on their winning streak.
Remember,
man,
you can't say asterisk without ass. So
I'll remember that, John.
Okay.
Thank you.
So they started out with a loss.
You're right. By God, by George, I think he's got it.
They started out by losing that first game to Yalcolt, and they beat them the next game to start the streak. They in this 8-game winning streak, they beat the Tigers at home, they beat the Carp at home, and then they won one game at Yokohama, and they had a four-game series with Yokohama because one of the games was a rain makeup day, and they won that first one, and then they got swept three. So they've been really streaky this past month, to say the least. But the bullpen suddenly got very good. Guys like Hiroto Fuku and Toshiya Okada, and I mean, they lost Rydell Martinez to Cuban national team duty.
Yep.
And so he was gone, but they brought up Zoilo Almonte, and he has been hitting. And but then they also lost Takashi, the guy I call Takashi, that's Shuhei Takahashi, whom we mentioned on last week's show because he was leading the Central League in batting, and he ruptured a tendon in his little finger, I think, on his right hand. And so they didn't even talk about when he would be back. I didn't see anything in terms of when he'd be back, and they were thinking that he might have to have surgery, so that's a problem. And that was one of the things I had talked about Takahashi, that he has had one really good season where he was playing really well and he looked like he was going to, he had arrived as a hitter, and then he got injured. So this is another season. He's hitting much better this season, less power than that, than that 2000, I think it was 16 season that he had a sort of breakout.
I look at his numbers and you know what I see? Basically, I see the improvement as not striking out as much.
Well, that was putting my thing. I was
putting more balls in play.
Yeah, I was watching because he had a tendency to let some pitches go by that he wasn't ready to hit. And I was watching when he was getting that front foot down and trying to compare, because I went back and looked at a few things on YouTube from earlier seasons where he has that foot in the air a little bit longer. And I thought he was getting the foot down quicker this season, and that's what helped him take advantage of some of those pitches that he used to just let by and that he wasn't swinging at because they were strikes.
Yeah. So what I see is that he's probably he's marginally better than he's been, and then he's had better luck with his balls in play.
Well, yeah, I mean, he seems to be, he's taken a lot more, I don't know if you look at his spray charts from the past seasons, but he's taken a lot more shots right through the box. He's hitting shots right through the box, and you're going to get more hits if you can hit line drives or even ground balls through the box. So I've seen that. But, so the Dragons ran into teams that were basically in the top three, and the winning streak went away. And it seems like when they play those teams that are, you know, the Giants and even the Bay Stars, who were not actually...
We're now in second place.
Yeah, or now in second place today because of the sweep, though. But when they met the Dragons, they were all pretty even. And they seemed to struggle with the upper echelon teams. So, yeah, when the Swallows and the Tigers were out there... Actually, they were at home, too. That's the other thing. They keep losing a lot of these games on the road, so...
Yeah, it's easier to have an 8-game winning streak when 6 of those are at home.
Right. But anyway, again, the Dragons. I think I had an exchange online on Twitter with my favorite follow of Japanese baseball, Aozora, and I said a lot really had to go right for the Dragons during this winning streak, and he pointed out, hey, any winning streak of extended games has a lot going right. So it's not just the Dragons. And I'm like, yeah, that's a good point. It's a fair point. But I really thought that the Dragons had some really great fortune in putting an 8-game winning streak together. And all it did was get them to within, I think, 3 games of 500. They're still under 500.
Yeah. Now, just a second. Do you remember the Carp? The Carp had a long winning streak this year, correct? Like 13 games or something?
Early on, I don't know if it was it 13? Early on, yeah, they had the winning streak that
like April to May.
Yeah, yes.
Okay, and then they had a long losing streak, which is now that's the weird one because
the 11 game skid. Yes.
Yeah, because basically, bad teams like never have long losing streaks. It's just too hard.
Mm-hmm.
And good teams never have long. Excuse me, bad teams never have long winning streaks because it's too hard. And good, really good teams never have long losing streaks. So it's so weird that the Carp have both. They're like the ultimate Jekyll and Hyde team this year.
Yeah, and that doesn't surprise me, though. I didn't see that long winning streak coming. And when they were in the midst of this 11-game slide, I kept thinking...
Of course you didn't see it coming. You never did anything right, as you admitted earlier.
Oh, you're right.
I'm sorry. I did admit that.
Yeah, I didn't see it coming, but yeah, but when they were in the midst of that slide, I thought, well, this is the team I kind of expected to have some struggles. So, not an 11-game slide struggle, but I did expect, you know, them to lose some of those games. And again, when things are going right for a team that's in a winning streak, things are going really poorly for a team that's in a skid. And that's just what happened.
The Carp one was the losing streak was the first five or six games they actually played really well, and they were really I'm oversimplifying here, but they played very well in the start of the streak, and it was only towards the end that they had like every other game was just pitiful.
Right.
They'd almost win, but they had the bad ones were at the end. I think there was like some a little despair creeping in there. I know they're not despairing, and it's mostly bad luck and whatnot, but it's hard not to keep your head up all the time when everyone's trying to tell you how bad you're playing.
Right, right. So there have been a lot of streaks in the Central League, and it's fun to see. I just think it just proves how close all these teams are, so it should be fun watching these last 2.5-3 months here. So, all right, no questions this week. Anyone who has a question, send it to yakyujohn@gmail.com. Leave us a note on Twitter with the hashtag HighHeat @JBWPodcast, or send questions or comments on our Facebook page, and let us know how we're doing. Let us know if you know what your favorite team is. And I always say asking a question about your team is the best way to get your team talked about on the show. So thank you very much for listening. We'll talk to you next week. I'm glad to be back in the city. Enjoy your baseball.
See you back in civilization. You'll find John there.